Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 20th of October, recording at 9:08 p.m. British Summer Time. And this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. This was the week during which stock markets, which have been so strong and so consistent of late, commenced a consolidation, but no significant downward moves within this consolidation process to date. But we have seen, not surprisingly, some loss of upside momentum. Government bonds generally continuing the easier trend that we've seen over the last 2 or 3 weeks. And the UK gilt futures, well, they're testing the bottom of their range. In other words, yields in the UK have, for long-dated government bonds, have pushed back up towards their highs. This was the week in which the US dollar, which had been strong for really quite some time, slipped a little bit, although it's marginally firmer in here today. And this was a week in which precious metals saw some quite reasonable gains, including some little breakouts yesterday, but got pegged back here today a bit, in line with the weaker oil price. And oil has touched a new reaction low, I believe, in here tonight. I'll just check that because I don't want to be incorrect on that. And I'm looking at the crude, the NYMEX crude. Yes, we did touch a new reaction low in here today, and it was quite a big reversal from what we had seen earlier on in the day, because crude oil in the morning rallied up to 59.40, but then dropped to 56.55, and has closed out the day at 56.82. And this was the week in which grains, which had been going gangbusters on the upside, led by wheat and corn have slipped into what looks like a consolidation. The downward dynamics are not that big relative to, well, there aren't that many downward dynamics, so it seems to be pulling back in a rather, they seem to be pulling back in a rather orderly fashion, which looks more like a consolidation for that volatile sector. Okay, well, where are we in the scheme of things? Unwinding an overbought condition in the short term for the stock markets, but I don't see anything looking serious at the moment right now. Valuations are not overstretched. The technical action, which is all important in my view, is really quite good, but as I did say, overbought. So we could certainly see this, I would expect this consolidation to carry on into next week and perhaps last a little bit longer. But the overall environment really remains quite bullish. And I could see this carrying on, as I've said many times before, through the end of the year. And historically, the third year of the U.S. presidential cycle, that's 2007 in this instance, is the most bullish year on average. And I think we're on schedule for another bullish year in 2007, but there are headwinds, or there are, I think I described them yesterday as a bit like those storms that start to form out at sea, and you wonder if it's going to turn into a hurricane or a cyclone, as they'll call it, in the Asian region, and if that happens, is it going to come to shore? Well, certainly there are potential storms forming out there, and some of them will come to shore. And one of them, and the most important one perhaps, is rising inflationary pressures. Now, the crude oil market, to put that in perspective, crude oil's price is the most important of all the commodities by far in terms of the inflation stakes. So at the moment, no inflation pressure is coming from crude oil. As a matter of fact, just the opposite. And that gives the global economy some breathing space, and it has benefited, and I think will continue to benefit from that. But in terms of other commodities, we see the strength of industrial metals, and that will have some knock-on effect. I think more importantly, we see right now we see the strength of some of the crucial food commodities. Wheat and corn prices are quite high, really. Soybeans are lagging well behind, although they certainly roared into life or have roared into life over the last 2 or 3 weeks, but are not historically high. They're still historically low right now. And some other food prices, orange juice is one that would be particularly important in the US, is really quite strong overall. So we do see those commodity inflation pressures, but again, as I say, you can really conclude, and I do conclude, that oil's current weakness offsets all the rest. But big question is with other industrial commodities pushing up, and also some soft commodities, and with a weak oil price, very likely to give the global economy, which is already synchronized in a period of GDP expansion, with the weak oil price likely to give the global economy a second wind. How long will the oil price stay low? Well, you've got every possible view on this, as you can imagine. That's what makes a market. My own view is that there's no evidence yet that it's about to go rushing back up, but I suspect that we are in a bottoming area. Now, the longer oil stays relatively low, and I think the US administration clutching at straws here, oil is a big straw that they hope won't hurt them too much in the elections. I think they'll get shellacked. In other words, that the Democrats will take one or probably both houses. But I digress, and that's not my subject in here. Although that may, well, it'll be interesting to see how the market interprets that. If the market's strong, it'll shrug off whatever happens. If the market's technically vulnerable, it'll react. In other words, come down a little bit, whatever happens as a result of that election. But the important point that I want to make or repeat in here is that as long as the oil price, or while the oil price remains relatively soft or just doesn't rise, that will be good for global GDP growth. That will be helpful for global stock markets, and it won't put government bonds under as much pressure as a rising oil price would. Now, going back to those storm systems forming, they're all interrelated because inflationary pressures pick up, then the central banks will be under pressure to raise interest rates a little bit more, perhaps. They may resist that, but they won't be able to resist it indefinitely if we see weakness in long-dated government bonds. And therefore, those are the areas that we have to watch in terms of the bullish outlook for stock markets. I think it will remain a bullish outlook, but the question I'm asking is, will inflationary pressure, partly related to commodities, but also including wages during a synchronized global economic expansion, will that inflationary pressure be sufficiently strong to trigger another response by central banks and another medium-term correction during 2007? That's the don't know. We know what to watch. I've already mentioned it, particularly focusing on that oil price and the long-dated government bond yields. But it's certainly going to happen at some time, and I think If I were a betting man, I would say that the odds are better than 50-50 that we'll get a medium-term correction at some point in 2007 related to inflationary concerns. I don't think we have to worry about that right now because the oil price is low, still probing for a low, and the government bond yields aren't doing that badly. UK gilts are the ones that I'm watching being the exception, but things can change quickly in markets and often do. So again, we'll be guided by these charts. In terms of sectors overall, certainly we still see big caps dominating the action and getting the better relative performance more often than not. I don't think that will change anytime soon. In terms of relative strength, well, it's been pretty evenly spread across sectors, but we've had Europe at the forefront, the US not that far behind, and Asian emerging markets pushing up closely behind the action that we've seen in the US. And there isn't, as I say, there isn't a great deal of difference as far as that relative performance is concerned, but there is a pecking order there, Europe, US, and the Asian markets. Developed Asia, Japan, Korea, they don't look bad, but are lagging. Singapore is also developed Asia, and that's doing pretty well overall. So we've had new highs on the Singapore index as well. And I also or also we've seen quite a significant improvement in the commodity markets overall, the commodity related markets. I'm talking about Mexico, South Africa. We've had new highs there. Australia is up quite near its highs. Quite good action taking place there. Canada has improved, having been a laggard over the last couple of months. That's improved quite a good bit. So just healthy action here generally among these world stock markets. I see no need to change the weighting of my own portfolio, which I have shifted a bit in recent months to be more heavily weighted. This reflects both my investment positions and some of my speculative positions that I have open, but to be weighted a bit more heavily in favor of Asian emerging markets, which is a sector I like a lot. Again, the relative performance is not screaming Asian emerging markets relative to let's say the European markets or the USA in here right now, but in terms of the safety and the long-term growth prospects, and my investment portfolio is very much focusing on the long-term outlook. I'm going to stay heavily overweighted there, and in India is my biggest position, and I'm very happy to have that remain the case. Thailand is the best Asian value play, having been held up by the political uncertainty that's been taking place. And I've got quite a significant representation there, but I'm unlikely to be holding Thailand through the next 10 years, whereas I may, barring a little bit of pruning if it gets when it accelerates up too much, I'm very likely to still be with India. I hope that I'll still be with China. But that depends a bit on how the political situation tends to break in that country. In other words, if we get a gradual, well, certainly the emphasis will remain on capitalization, but what does concern me is the authoritarian regime, and at some stage, I think that's likely to prove unacceptable to a lot of the rapidly developing, growing, expanding middle class that we see in China. But I'm very much aware that that's a Western perspective, and I know that a lot of Asian listeners may well feel that I overemphasize that point, and they'll hold up the example of Singapore, where you had a pretty authoritarian regime. Okay, they weren't going out and shooting people, and people weren't disappearing. It wasn't as rough as the communist regime with a capitalist economic policy that you have in China, that's for certain. But my point is that authoritarian regimes in Asia are tolerated far more than they would be in the West, for instance, where, well, we don't have any. They've all been replaced with democracies. Okay, don't want to digress too much because there's other ground, important ground to cover here. Moving on to the government bonds, again, this is going to be a key indicator for stock markets. It is not an area that I like in terms of investment potential. I think at the yield lows that we saw back in September for long-dated government bonds, first, that always looked, those that dip in the yields always looked like a bit of a dip back into the base formation for yields, which I see is moving erratically higher over the next decade or more. And therefore, in terms of price action, the rallies and the futures looked like rallies back up into the lower recesses of large overhanging top formations, which I suspect will lead to erratically lower long-dated government bond prices over time. So I don't like the sector from an investment perspective, and I'm not going to touch it. I had talked previously about shorting bonds. Once again, you remember I did that earlier in the year with some quite reasonable success, and I talked about after this predictable technical rally coinciding with the sell-off in stock markets commencing in May, had run its course, that I would probably go in and short. I haven't. I thought about it, but I think I'd said in an earlier audio at least once that I had been felt spoiled for choice here, and I really chose to participate with other trades, and the ones that have done best have been positions in those Asian investment trusts. Okay. So again, don't like the bonds, and higher yields will cause problems. They will cause problems for central banks. They will cause problems for borrowers. And that's a problem that lies out there, lies out there ahead. There are always problems, aren't there? We just have to be able to monitor them, be aware of them, and then adjust our portfolios and our risk profile accordingly. Okay, looking at the US dollar, I don't really see it going much stronger. In fact, we have seen it soften in here this week. US interest rates are still a cushion for the dollar against the euro and the Swiss franc, and most of all against the Japanese yen. And the yen still has carry trade interest overall. But I think currencies, for the most part, are likely to be relatively subdued. I mean, the hardest currency around generally, previously it was the resources currencies, but when we had the correction, then some of them slipped. And of course, there had been efforts by the central banks in the resources countries, Canada, Australia, New Zealand, to stem the strength of their currencies, and they were successful in doing that. So just about the hardest currency overall has been the Singapore dollar. And I'm not aware of any bleating taking place in Singapore over this yet, but it's something that would happen if that Singapore dollar strength actually continued. But Singapore is a lot less vulnerable to currency strength than a number of other economies that we could mention. Sorry about the rasping voice here, but I will struggle on in terms of the voice. I think not in terms of what I want to say. It's just how I say it. In terms of the resources, the impressive story has really been the strength of the industrial metals. And I think this just adds more evidence to the super cycle bull market theory. There is always a risk that contagion can spill over from the oil sector onto precious metals, and we do see that from time to time. But the industrial metals have been sufficiently strong to shake that off. The precious metals have been less strong, less able to shake off the contagion coming from selling pressure in oil than the industrial metals. So that has they remain, the industrial metals remain the strongest bull sector of all, just as they have been all along, among resources. The precious metals then come next, and then we have the energy sector, with one exception, which is uranium, and that just continues to rise and rise, but that trend is steepening, and so it's gradually moving into that type one ending characteristic, and it'll be, well, nothing goes on forever, and uranium won't. But I've said for years that it was the best of the energy stories, and it remains the best of the energy stories. And some of those big miners that I like so much are, of course, uranium producers. Precious metals, I think, we've had a lot of talk about the Dow Jones Industrial Average moving over the 12,000 level, but have a look at that Dow gold ratio on the long-term charts, and I think Owen put some of those up here today, or it will be up when I finish uploading the site tonight. Over the very short term, the Dow is actually rising a bit against gold, as you would expect, but I think that's just a little technical rally within the long-term downtrend for the Dow against gold. So what I'm really saying is there may well be enough liquidity around. I suspect there will be enough liquidity around for the Dow to put in a respectable absolute performance. But relative to gold, I expect it to continue to underperform. I've been saying that for the last few years, and I don't see any evidence and any reason, and certainly no technical evidence, to change that view. Silver is high beta gold, so it'll do better during the rallies and get bigger setbacks during the corrections. I regard precious metals as being cheap at these levels, but they are likely to see a bit further support building, certainly while the oil price remains a bit soft. So it's a little bit of a tricky environment here now for futures traders because of fairly choppy action. I had 3/4. I actually increased my silver position earlier today. It was still quite small. When I say still quite small, there are days when I would add a silver position that was as big as the 4 units that I had recently, but 3 of them were in profit, and I'd raised the stop yesterday. It was quite a tight stop, but we had that little breakout. I thought, well, if it's going to trend and run now, then fine, it'll be okay. If not, then that'll get shaken out. But I bought a little bit more earlier today, and then saw the other 3 positions get stopped out at modest for modest gains. Now, I haven't stopped the remaining position. It's sufficiently small, and silver is sufficiently low so that I'm not worried about it overall. But in terms of how to play it, tactically, if the market's going to range, then the best strategy would be some sort of baby steps, nibble on dips and lighten up on the rallies. I was hoping that it would trend up from here, but and it hasn't. What I don't want to do is to have a medium-sized, let alone large position, while the market is still choppy and ranging around. Now that's trading. If you are investing and you're going into that silver bullion fund, I think it's the ETF. And if you're going into, if you're in gold bullion, unleveraged position, well, these are good prices, and I think you'll look at these prices a year or two from now and say how attractive they were and why the worry. And I know there are a lot of subscribers who do have substantial positions in gold bullion and have been feeling a little bit stressed about it, understandably, because it had come off that 735 or whatever it was high very rapidly. But just put things in perspective, gold had a great run. It did accelerate up to that high, and it was a predictable medium-term correction. It's in a buying zone in here right now. But what I'm saying is that with oil weak, we're unlikely to see a strong, consistent upward trend in the short term. Okay, looking at the oil complex, the energy complex, oil is the weakest of the petroleum contracts. Natural gas, which had been so weak previously, has been outperforming oil recently. Heating oil and gasoline are outperforming crude oil also. So that suggests to me, on a commonality basis, that okay, oil's the odd man out and the most important one, but it is in an area where the short-term downside risk is not so great as the medium, let alone longer-term upside potential. And we have seen a loss of momentum overall, and I think we have commenced the bottoming out process, although clearly as of today's new reaction low, we haven't seen that actual low, but there is historic support at these levels. And we also are seeing a producer effort here to curtail production just a little bit in the short term until that supply overhang of immediately available oil is run down. And run down it will be because of the strength of the overall global economy. And of course, the weaker oil is, if it's outright bearish for any sector, it's bearish for the synthetics. So that's why some of those ethanol shares have come way back down, and we're hearing a lot less talk about alternative fuels. That will, of course, change again once the oil price starts to push back upwards, as it surely will, because we are consuming a lot more crude oil. I'm talking about we, the global economy, is consuming a lot more crude oil than it can replace with new discoveries. And so that's the problem. That's the long-term problem. And that demand for crude oil is certainly not peaking. It goes up inexorably year after year, including, as I've said before, during that last recession, which spanned part of 2001 and 2002. The overall rise in global consumption of crude oil, it slowed, but it was still up during those years. It's up every single year. And I don't see that changing this side of a severe global recession. And I don't see any chance of a severe global recession unless there's some huge exogenous shock to the system, which would have to be of biblical proportions. And I'm certainly not forecasting something like that. Oh, okay, grains. Well, very much weather related, but corn stocks are low, and the wheat stocks are going to be down. So, the environment that we've seen in recent years, despite all the global warming talk and volatility and so on, and now we have the El Niño talk, the environment has been pretty benign for growers, and that just cannot go on indefinitely, sooner or later, as we've always seen throughout history. Something goes wrong with the production cycle, and then you get a run on the upside. And with the global population greater, with the increased wealth in developing countries, well, that just leads to more demand for these important resources. Okay, well, I think I've probably gone on long enough now and covered the important bases. I hope you feel I have. So it's just time for me to bid you adieu, say have a terrific weekend, and I'll get down now and complete the updating of the website. All the very best.